You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're tuned in to the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, and I'm joined by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer here on Cleveland.com. Paul, it's the off season. It's good to hear from you. We're going to try something different here. We're gonna go through our. I've got my tuxedo on, but the stack of envelopes is right next to me. We've got our awards show.
Is it a red carpet rolled out?
Red carpet interviews and everything. We're all set. It's award season, a little bit before the end of the playoffs here. We're going to pass out our Cleveland Indians awards for the 2019 season. It didn't end the way that a lot of people wanted it to, but still a lot of good to find in the season. It was a long 6 months, plenty of little gems and nuggets to overturn. So, let's get started right off the top with the Joe Charbonneau Rookie of the Year Award. Paul, the nominees are Oscar Mercado, Zach Plesac, and Aaron Civale. What do you think of the field in this one?
Yeah, that's a good group. And, the Indians got a lot of contributions from younger players this year that came up from Columbus and came up from Akron as well, too, that really, helped them win 93 games. That's a good field, too. Mercado, Plesac, Civale. Mercado in center field really kind of stabilized that position after Leonis Martin, DFA'd. And then Plesac and Civale, as Francona said many times, really saved the Indians because they came right up in there and stabilized the rotation.
Mercado in 115 games hit 15 home runs, drove in 54. And had a 761 OPS. Not bad. I would like to see what he can do over a full 162 game schedule. That would be interesting to see how he would hold up and how the numbers would hold up. Plesac and Civale obviously came in, contributed tremendous, like you said, from the player development system and for them to be able to come up and do what they did. Plesac 8-6. Civale, Plesac was 8-6 in 21 starts, and Civale came in, went 3-4 in 10 starts. Throw the numbers aside, just passing the eye test. For me, out of the three rookies, Civale was the one that sort of surprised me the most, just for him to come in and pitch the way he did. Obviously, Mercado probably provided the most value to the team.
Yeah, if I was voting, Joe, I'd have to go with Mercado. Just everyday guy, really filled out that second spot behind Lindor in the lineup, and produced offensively, stole some bases. He had his moments in center field, some good, some bad. Hopefully we don't have to see him too much in left field. But I thought he had a really solid rookie year. I like what Francona said about him. Said he had some ups and downs, but when he went into a down period, he always was able to climb out of it and get back and find that, the upper level of his game. So that was, I thought he showed a lot of bounce back, a lot of heart.
Yeah, and that's, that's one of those things that sort of separates players as they grow, is the ability to come back, out of those slumps like that. All right, I want to remind everybody who's listening, as we go through these awards, we will be posting polls for you to take, and you can vote, and we'll reveal the votes that the listeners chose for each one of these awards as we go on our next podcast. The Lou Boudreau Coach of the Year Award nominees go to Terry Francona, Carl Willis for the job that he did with the pitching rotation, and we're going to promote Ruben Niebla here, the director of minor league pitching, the minor league pitching coordinator, Ruben Niebla. Give him a nod for what he did with the young pitchers on the staff. Obviously, Tito, this is probably one of the best jobs that he's ever done in terms of managing a roster that was just decimated by injuries, and to still have the team contending within a week of the end of the season is pretty good. Like we said, Willis, you eliminate, three-fifths of your starting rotation, and for them to still be one of the top pitching staffs in the league is also pretty good. What do you think of this field here, Paul?
Yeah, another good choice, Joe. I thought Francona really, could have lost the ball club, and right in they're what, 11 and a half out on June 3rd. They came all the way back, caught the Twins, passed them, were in first place for one day by half game. I think it was August 14th. And then, the Twins hit, found another gear and got their legs back under them and reclaimed the division. But just to come back from that far away, from that big a hole, that says something about, I think, Tito's leadership, about his ability to he always says you got to be the same guy day in and day out. You got to concentrate on the game at hand, not to close the door on yesterday, and not to look too far into the future. And I think that the whole team took his attitude and took his lead on that, and that's why they were able to close the gap and stay in contention as long as they did. So thought he did a great job. I think Carl Willis, did a nice job with the rotation and, in just incorporating those young guys into it and helping them, adjust to the big leagues really on the fly. Plesak, Plutko, Savali, not so much Plutko. He's been up and down a bunch in previous years, but, Savali and Plesak, those guys weren't even in big league camp.
Right. Yeah. It's the first time they saw them.
They started the year at AA, and Niebla, I think, Ruben did a great job, and the coaches and instructors under him did a great job getting these guys ready. I mean, you look at that whole rotation, starting with even Kluber, a healthy Kluber. Those guys, have all gone through the kind of the Ruben Niebla school of pitching in the minors. That includes Clevinger, Bieber. All those guys, and he's made big adjustments in all their deliveries, and he's got those guys ready to not only as Francona and even Kluber has said, not only to get here, that's one thing, to get to the big leagues, but to help your team win, that's the biggest thing, and Ruben and his staff did a great job with that.
Yeah. So again, that's it might not look you might not have a lot of choices as far as the different coaches in the system, but that's a tough pick. Tito obviously at the front and Niebla, kind of behind the scenes, and Willis right there every day grinding out with the pitching staff. That's going to be a tough one for the listeners to decide on, I think. But if I were voting, I would give a nod to Ruben Niebla and the player development staff.
Yeah, because they provided the talent. I mean, it's right. And you have to have talent to. It all starts with talent, and you've got to have those pitchers ready. Not just showing up and walking through the door of the clubhouse at Progressive Field, but ready to go onto the mound, throw quality pitches, and help your team win.
All right, let's stay with the pitching theme. Our Bob Feller Award for the best pitcher, rather than Cy Young, we'll go with the Indians legend Bob Feller as the namesake for the award. The nominees are Shane Bieber, Mike Clevinger, and Brad Hand. You got to throw Brad Hand in there, you know, for the first maybe, you know, half of the season, Brad Hand was as good as any pitcher in baseball. So you have Shane Bieber, who won 15 games, was second in the league in strikeouts. Third in the league in strikeouts, second in innings pitched. Mike Clevinger came in. He won 13 games, went on a real hot streak there, winning up like something like 10 decisions in a row. He finished with 169 strikeouts in just 126 innings pitched, despite missing 2 months with an injury that could have cost him the entire season. Brad Hand, in the first half of the season, you know, pitched his way onto the All-Star team. He had 34 saves on the year, and his ERA was you know, 1-something before that June 25th blow up against Kansas City. So that's the field. What do you think of these guys, Paul, as far as nominees for Bob Feller Pitcher of the Year?
Yeah, I think you probably have to go with Bieber, Joe, and just from just the total package kind of thing. You know, this guy, you know, second year in the big leagues, he makes 33 starts. He pitches over 214 in the third innings, 259 strikeouts.
That's,
you know,
crazy.
And 40 walks, you know, his batting average against was 230. I mean, you know, without him, especially when you lose Carrasco, you lose Kluber, your two lead dog starters, you know, you need somebody to step up there and pitch innings, pitch against the other team's best starter, and, you know, just to get a team consistently deep into the game. And he did that. You know, it took a toll on him. You could see that toward the end of the year, you know, in that last road trip, I think he was tired. But I give that guy all the credit in the world. I'd have to go with Bieber. I would have loved to see Clevinger, you know, if he could have stayed on that role he was on and he didn't get hurt, because he was dealing from, you know, from the first week of the season.
Right.
He hurts the shoulder and doesn't come back. You know, he misses him, what, 5-6 weeks. And a Hand, you know, you don't win without a closer. This guy saved, what, 34 games in like 38 chances, 39 chances. You know, all closers probably blow 4-5. You know, it looked worse because of, you know, what happened to him in the second half. He just looked a little tired. Obviously, he was tired. And the way his season ended, you know, we saw him like pitch on the last home game of the season. Then we didn't see him again. So, right. You know, but I, you know, if I'm voting, I've got to go with Bieber.
Yeah, I think Bieber would get the award in my mind just because of consistency over the course of the season. But to me, Clevinger's stuff was fantastic. It was he had superior stuff to anybody else on the staff all year long. You know, fastball life, movement. He could go out there and give you a stretch of innings in any particular game where you had no chance. So I think Clevinger's stuff was dominant, you know, throughout the year, and probably some of the best in the league, if you think about it.
Yeah, no argument there. I just would have loved to seen him, you know, go 200 innings, make 30, 33 starts, and just see what he could have done. Because he, you know, they probably win the division if he's healthy, you know, from day one. I think they, you know, they're not finishing 8 games back. I know that.
Right. And maybe some of the other pitchers, you know, maybe Bieber is able to get a day or two in the rotation and not be running on fumes at the end of the year.
That's a good point.
Yeah. The Joe Jackson Silver Slugger Award, named after the Indians' all-time leader in batting average, Shoeless Joe Jackson. Carlos Santana, Francisco Lindor, and we throw it in as a nominee, Roberto Perez, who had a career year as well. That's That's a loaded question right there. I think you've got a top five player in all of baseball in Lindor. You've got Santana, who had a career year in pretty much every way possible. And same with Roberto Perez. I would have loved to have seen Roberto Perez stay completely healthy and maybe catch 120 games, this season. But he was still able to put up a career high 24 home runs this year. What do you think of these guys, Paul?
Yeah, I think, those are some good choices. You know, I've got to go with Santana. I think, Lindor missed 20 games at the beginning of April, and that's not his fault. He was hurt. But I think Perez was kind of the dominant force in that lineup. You know, he hit in the middle of the lineup, from day one. He was consistent. He gave the Indians power. He gave run production, and he really kind of drove the bus in the first part, especially in the first half. You know, he went to an all-star game for the first time in his career. Lindor, I love Lindor. Really liked the way he, refused to come out of the lineup. What he missed that most of April and still played, 140 games?
Yeah, even when he came back in April, he didn't, space it out. He just hit the ground running and stayed in the lineup. Even if he was feeling sore, with the calf and the ankle injuries, he played through it. And by the end of the year, you totally didn't even remember that he had been sort of hobbled in the first half of the season.
And then he goes, over 30 home runs, 40 doubles for the third straight year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're getting production out of your leadoff hitter. I think, they seriously have to think about maybe moving him down in the lineup next year and taking advantage of that power, because, I think he could have been a much more effective. I mean, I think he could have driven in a lot more runs, if you move him down and hit him three, maybe hit him five. Or I know you want to get him as many bats as you want, and the leadoff spot works well. But if the bottom of the order isn't getting on base, he's not doing you too much good up there.
All right. So those are the nominees. Obviously Santana, just in 34 home runs, it tied his career high, but it wasn't just the home runs. It was, the consistency all the way through, which is something that we hadn't seen in his career to this point, was, hitting in April, which he basically carried the ball club, through the first 2 months of the year, offensively.
Yeah. And I like the fact, he changed his approach, Joe. He wasn't a dead pull hitter like he'd been in the past. He tried to hit the ball up the middle. And this is a guy 33, 34 years old. And you don't see veteran guys change like that. And this guy made a conscious effort to use the whole field more, and it really worked well for him.
Yes, and the on-base machine. I mean, he if he's not going to get you a hit, he's going to work you a walk or take you deep. Nobody saw more pitches on this team than Carlos Santana this year. Moving on to the Omar Vizquel Gold Glove Award. So we've got a couple of nominees here. Obviously, Francisco Lindor, who's won a Platinum Glove in the past. He's always going to be in the conversation. You see things out of him. Particularly the bounce throws and the short hop throws that he makes from shortstop with the quick release, I think are, stuff that we don't see often throughout the league, and he continues to sort of impress you with something new every day. We have Oscar Mercado, the rookie center fielder, who, like you said, as long as he's in center, I've never seen a player, not be able to move over to left field or whatever, or any of the three outfield positions like that, and just totally lose his mind, because Oscar Mercado was not good in left field, but in center field he made some fantastic plays. And Roberto Perez, we're going to throw in there as the third nominee, because he led all of baseball in defensive runs saved this year, according to FanGraphs, and he's a strong candidate for a Gold Glove Award from Rawlings at the end of the year when those are announced. What do you think of this field, Paul?
Yeah, I like this field. I think the Indians could have multiple Gold Glove winners out of there. Perez, he catches over 100 games, no pass balls.
That's throughout. Insane. That's insane, by the way. That's nuts. That doesn't.
That's crazy.
Particularly, you're talking about a guy who, obviously, Carlos Carrasco throws that split finger pitch, but that if it bounces, it's, you know, a wild pitch. But to never get crossed up and to always be on the same page with these guys, that's insane.
Yeah, and he threw out 37. I think he threw out 37% of the runners who challenged him. Think about it, Joey. I mean, those rookie pitchers, even Bieber and Clevenger and Bowers when he was here, they always complimented Roberto and just said, he did a great job behind the plate. Now Bowers would shake off God if he was behind the plate. Not only that, he'd shake him off two or three times. But nobody else shook him off, and he brought those young guys, Plesac, Savali, along. You know, Plutko said he trusted Perez with his life. You know, when he was on the mound. So, you know, I think that goes a long way that says a lot about your catcher. And he was playing on a bad ankle. I still don't know. I know he was getting checked out to see if he needed surgery on that right ankle. We haven't heard anything, but that's something to look into. But in the second half, he wasn't the same offensively, but it never affected his defense.
Right. I've noticed on a couple of his Instagram stories that he's posted since the end of the season. Looks like he's on some sort of diet. So he's posting pictures of his meals, and he's eating a lot more vegetables and salads. So we might see a leaner, slimmer Roberto Perez maybe next year. To try and take some of the pressure off of the knees and ankles, but definitely a strong season for Perez there behind the plate defensively.
And Lindor, I thought he had one of his better defensive seasons. I know he made 10 errors, but I thought he made his, like you were saying, the bounce throws. I thought he looked a lot more consistent to me, just a lot more. I don't know, just, he was into every game. You didn't see that little slide sometimes like he has, where he has a little slump, two or three game slump. He just looked very, very good, very, very into the game. His arm strength looked like it was improved to me. And, I was talking to him about it, Joe, and he said once, last year, 2 years ago, they had a rotation that struck everybody out. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as many ground ball chances, and this rotation teams were able to put the ball in play more. He was more active, and I think that really improved his play. And I thought he had a great year. And Mercado, highlight reel, catching in center field. I thought he had a great year. I think he's going to get better too. I don't think we've seen the best of him.
As far as Lindor goes, I looking at the numbers, the team numbers for double plays, the Indians are way down low. You've got some guys that can really turn the ball and pick it in the middle of the infield there, and yet you're ranking in terms of the number of double plays turned pretty low in the league, and that's because of the pitching staff, like you said.
Yeah.
when the ball is in
it, it's a good thing when guys aren't getting on base.
Yeah. All right, let's move to play of the year. And we have a few nominees here. Like we mentioned, Mercado, he made a catch September 4th against Eloy Jimenez from the Chicago White Sox that basically saved the game. It was a line drive that was destined to be a double over his head. Mercado reached out and grabbed it. The most amazing part of that play was that it kept all four runners or all three runners that were on base from scoring because – Jose Abreu didn't have the presence of mind to tag up and score from third. Basically won the game for the Indians that day. Another game-saving play was Tyler Naquin's double play against Detroit on June 21st. Naquin came in, caught the line drive off the bat of Nicholas Castellanos, and then doubled up the runner at first base with a strong throw. Basically pulled Brad Hand's rear end out of the fire in that instance as well. And then the grand slam by Carlos Santana in Minnesota in the 10th inning on August 11th. He came back and had a walk-off home run the next night in Cleveland. I believe it was against Boston. But that grand slam was sort of one of those, play-of-the-year moments. Paul, what do you think of the field of nominated plays here?
Boy, that's some tough choices right there. You know, Mercado's catch when he made it, I thought it saved the season for him. I really did. I thought it was, kind of like, it just looked like, you know, I thought they could ride that momentum to the postseason, you know, and get into wild card or maybe even catch the Twins. That's how big a catch it was. And it was like a remarkable catch. The guy smoked the ball. I forgot who hit it.
Jimenez, Eloy Jimenez. And then as he got to first base, he gave him the hat tip.
Yeah. And Jimenez had that great series, and Mercado just made a great catch. And, I thought they could ride that. They rode Giambi's, home run late in the season in 2013. I thought it was one of those kind of moments. Naquin's double play, diving catch against the Tigers in the ninth inning. That was a great play as well. I liked Jason Kipnis' comment after it. He said, told Naquin, nice route, Magellan. He didn't exactly take a straight line to the ball, but he made the catch, and he's got such a good arm. You know, he's got that great arm and completed the double play. And Santana's slam, big moment. Gave the Indians took 3 out of 4 from the Twins at Target Field. The next night, like you said, he hits the walk-off against Boston, and they go into first place for that by a half game for one day. And
that was the peak moment of the season right there, huh?
Yeah. So that was good as well. I kind of liked Mercado's catch. I thought that was late in the year. I thought they could ride that. It didn't happen, but it doesn't take anything away from the catch.
Right. I'm going to go with Naquin's double play just because of the degree of difficulty on that one was rather high. He had trouble with the lights in right field in the past. He talks often about there being a sort of a spot where you lose the ball there, that kind of ball hit at him. And I thought making a practically blind catch on the slide and then getting up and firing, with the strong throw was pretty impressive. All right, moving on to our moment of the year, and these are going to be Carlos Carrasco heavy, but I think everybody understands why the significance of what he went through this season isn't lost on anybody. Carlos Carrasco obviously diagnosed in May with chronic myeloid leukemia, came back after 2.5 months off. So our first moment of this year was nominee is Carlos Carrasco returning to the mound in Tampa Bay on September 1st. Paul, you were there in Tampa. What was that like?
That was really a cool moment, Joe. It was both sides, both teams came out of their dugouts and, were applauding him, gave him a standing O. You know, he's from the Tampa area, from that St. Petersburg area. He had a bunch of fans there. Everybody was on their feet, and it was a great moment. It was really cool. It was one of those moments that just sticks with you. You don't forget it. And Chris Antonetti said, every time he pitched, he got chills. You know, mm-hmm. Every time he watched Carrasco pitch, he got chills up and down his spine, and that's the way you feel because you know what he overcame, just to get out there. And it was a big moment. That was cool.
All right. The other Carlos Carrasco moment of the year would have been at the All-Star game on July 9th. The All-Star game every year for the past few years has had these stand up to cancer sort of moments where you come back from commercial and all the fans in the park and the players on the field are standing with signs recognizing who they sort of stand up for in the fight against cancer. And Carlos Carrasco was joined on the field by Terry Francona and all of his all-star teammates. That you want to talk about a moment that gave you chills, sitting in the press box at that game, sort of realizing what was going on at the time. It really made for a significant sort of poignant moment for us all, you were there sitting right next to me. What were you thinking?
I was really, I was speechless. I didn't expect it, Joe. You know, I didn't know, it just kind of caught me off guard. And just to see, you know, Carlos and, it's Carrasco there and Lindor and Santana and Hand and Tito, they had their arms around them. They were all standing, you know, together. That was breathtaking. It was, and anybody who's had, you know, and who's had their families touched by cancer, they just know how that it's such a, you know, it can change your life. You know, it changes your family, it changes everything about your life. And to see that on display and to, you know, have a firsthand knowledge of what was going on, that was a moment, definitely. That was something, probably the defining moment of the season.
All right, we'll throw a couple more nominees in here. We've got Jake Bowers hitting for the cycle on June 14th in Detroit, the first Indian cycle since, I believe, Roger Davis in 2016.
Yeah,
that's right. In Toronto. Pretty big moment there for Jake Bowers.
Yeah, that was a big moment for him, especially, you know, how – What an unusual season Bowers has had. You know, he's been up and down. He'd been up and down. You know, they kept running him out there every day almost. They were giving him every chance in the world. And I think it's the tip of the iceberg with this guy. You can see what he can do. You know, that kind of talent is there. And now how do you get to it? How do you get to it on a more consistent basis? I think, you know, that's something the Indians are going to have to – you know, that's something Bowers is going to have to work on this winter, and the Indians are going to try to have to get it out of them, you know, in spring training next year and the years to come.
Mm-hmm. All right, and our final moment of the year nominee, the All-Star game, we go back to that, and Shane Bieber in the fifth inning gets MVP honors by striking out three consecutive National League batters in his first All-Star appearance. Incredible moment, just sort of the energy that was in that ballpark when he struck out Ketel Marte to finish off the inning. Just pretty amazing, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, and what was the crowd shouting? Let's go, Bieber!
Let's go, Bieber! Yeah, in your home ballpark in front of, you know, 35,000 fans, and they're all screaming your name and chanting for you. That's on national TV, a game everybody's watching. That was one of the biggest moments. I mean, he pitched a real gem later on in the season in front of his hometown fans in L.A. But still, you know, that's totally different in a half empty ballpark in L.A. Or Anaheim compared to, you know, your home park with people screaming your name
the whole time. The All-Star game on that night, that's the only game in the baseball game in the world. The whole baseball world is watching. You know, not from just coast to coast. From all over the world, and you know, what was the crowd chant?
The crowd was chanting "Let's go Bieber, let's go Bieber." But you know, after the game, we hunted down Shane's dad, sort of in the hallway outside the press conference room, and Bieber's father's quote after that was, you know, it's hard to chant. We asked him if he chanted along. He said, "It's hard to chant when you're crying." So that was pretty, you know, and he's standing there talking to all these reporters, holding his son's MVP award, the Ted Williams award. That was pretty cool.
That was the best. That was some great moments. You know, I get fired up just talking about all these moments, you know, in the season that's passed. You know, sometimes you're just so tired after the season that you want to forget it. But,
right. Well, and the way the season ended, it's hard to sort of take a moment and go back and pull all these great moments out. Well, here, Hoynesy, you said you get fired up. Here we go with the bonehead moments of the year. We're calling these the Manny Ramirez bonehead moment of the year plays. Manny always, you know, known for, you know, making his infamous goofs on the base pass in the outfield. But you still
Manny,
sort of love
Manny
him.
Was the only guy who ever saw that got thrown out trying to steal first base from second base.
Oh, jeez. It's amazing just some of the boneheaded plays that we've seen over the past year. Let's start with pretty much the one that I think everybody knows. Trevor Bauer on July 28th was surprised to be taken out of a game that he had just given up five earned runs in. And he turned and he threw the ball out of the ballpark, threw it over the wall in center field, hit the batter's eye over Oscar Mercado's head. Terry Francona asking what the heck he was thinking when he did that. That's moment number one. Moment number two, September 28th, Yasiel Puig, I'm sorry, September 8th, Yasiel Puig, you know, acquired in July trade for Trevor Bauer. Doesn't run out a ground ball, hit back to the pitcher, and, you know, just sort of turns and heads back to the dugout there in Minnesota in the middle of a pennant race. That's pretty unforgivable. We have June 25th, Brad Hand giving up a grand slam to Hunter Dozier with a – I believe he had entered the game for a save with a five-run lead, I believe, that – Kansas City rallied and wound up coming back to win. And the last moment was losing both ends of a bullpen game doubleheader to Minnesota on September 14th, which basically ended the Indians' chances for a fourth straight AL Central Division title. So what do you think of the moments? I know you were there for the Puig moment and the Brad Hand Grand Slam. What about, you know, those moments stands out for you?
Well, I think, you know, of that group, Bauer turning around and throwing the ball over the center field fence. That's something you don't see very often. And I know you were covering the game. Tell me what it was like.
You know what? I actually missed seeing him. I was typing something. I had my head down and I wasn't looking at the field because it's the moment where they're making a pitching change. So that's when you're doing your typing and you're writing or whatever.
Yeah.
And everybody in the press box goes, did he just throw that ball over the wall? And so I look up and I'm confused because I didn't know what was going on. But yeah. And then you're looking at replays and you're trying to find video. And sometimes the monitors are on a little bit of a delay. And I actually caught the shot of Terry Francona saying, and I'll put it nicely, what the heck are you thinking when he approached Bauer? But yeah, that was just it was a strange and confusing time, I guess.
That sums up Bauer's career in Cleveland.
Yeah. I didn't know what was going on when it happened. And you know, what about you were there in Minnesota with the Puig incident?
Yeah, you know, the Puig thing was, you know, I hadn't seen that in a long, long time. I mean, he didn't even take a step toward first base. All he did was hit the ball back, you know, and he hit the ball back to the pitcher. The pitcher came off the mound to flip the first base. And then the pitcher turned around and looked, and there was nobody running. He was looking for Puig, and Puig was nowhere in sight. You know, I thought it was, you know, right away that the Indians had expected stuff like this from Puig, mm-hmm. You know, and you know, just because of his reputation when they made the deal with Cincinnati. And, you know, and to his credit, that was probably only the only time he didn't hustle. And, you know, I liked the fact that Santana, you know, took him aside right away, talked to him in the dugout. And, you know, the next day he was running out walks like he was Pete Rose, you know. So he got the message. He got the message. And, but, you know, I think that, you know, they felt Puig would be on his best behavior, you know, when they got him, because he had to play for two clean months to going into the free agent market. And he did that for the most part, but that was one little breakdown where he dropped his guard.
Yeah, I would say if you were looking for him to be on his best behavior, that's as close as you were going to get in those last 2 months. All right, moving on, our final award, the Al Rosen MVP Award. Nominees are Carlos Santana, Francisco Lindor, Shane Bieber, Mike Clevinger, and Roberto Perez. Hoynesy, pick us a winner. Who's your MVP of the season for the Indians?
Boy, that's quite a field right there. You know,
you've got Santana is the nominee for the Hank Aaron Award from the Indians. He's the Indians representative on that ballot. You've got Perez, who's going to be a strong candidate for a Gold Glove Award at catcher. You've got Bieber, who should be among the top. If not Bieber, then Charlie Morton would be the third finalist for the AL Cy Young Award. And I think, you know, Lindor and Clevinger, as always, are, you know, in the conversation. So, you know, what's your take?
Yeah, Joe, I think I've got to go with Santana. Just I thought he kind of drove the bus for me from day one to the end of the season. I know he kind of slumped it toward the end of the year, but I thought he was a steadying influence in the middle of that lineup, and he never wavered. He was the same guy, played excellent defense at first base, and really, especially in the first half, really was productive in the middle of the lineup. I think I've got to go with Santana in that regard.
Yeah, I would echo your sentiment there. For me, Santana coming home to the organization was a big storyline throughout the season, and his leadership, like you said, after a year in Philly, he didn't have to break any TVs to be a leader in Cleveland. That was sort of one of the themes that popped up there. Jake Arrieta from the Phillies complaining about Santana's infamous TV smashing at the end of the 2018 season. But, you know, he did it without being the loud, voice. So, he did it with quiet example. And Terry Francona always says, you don't have to be the loudest to be the leader in the clubhouse. You go out by doing it the way Santana did it this year. To me, he's the man of the year for the Indians.
Yeah, and I think it's easier for a regular player, a position player that plays every day, mm-hmm. to be in that role. You know, you're in the lineup every day, you're out in the field every day. I think it's a little tougher for pitchers, especially starters who are out there every 4 or 5 days, to kind of set the pace, set the example. I think, to me, that kind of award usually goes to a star, a position player, a regular position player.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for our awards nominees. What we're going to do is, as we post this, this podcast and you're listening along, you're going to be able to vote this week for who you choose and what moments and things that you choose for these awards. And we'll reveal the winners briefly on our next podcast. Hoynsie, the playoffs continue in the American and National Leagues. The Yankees punching their ticket to the ALCS last night. Things are starting to get towards the point where the League Championship Series, the World Series, are going to start. After that, then all the fun of the offseason sort of starts. We're sort of in that holding pattern for the other 25 teams or so.
Yeah, there's been some great games so far. The playoffs have been interesting to watch.
All right, we will continue to watch that and check back in on our next Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.